Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to yet another episode of Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful to be with you tonight and for each of you who will join us. We're grateful, as always, to those who have joined us in the past and in the future. We extend appreciation to those who will join us. All right. You know the story. This is Talk Straight, and that's what we strive to do here. As you heard, this is sponsored by BFC Institute, Building Families and Communities Institute. That's our aim, our mission, our goal. And through this podcast, we want to offer informational, supportive, and useful conversation, dialogue. All right? 657-0944. That is the number to call into the live studio. Don't mind you calling. Love to engage with you. All right? I don't have to tell anybody that as we show courtesy and respect to one another, we can go a long way. All right? But we will certainly facilitate our wholesome dialogue tonight. For years, some have been saying that too many, I'll say, young people are frustrated throughout America. They have suggested that the church, for some time, that the church should offer that platform for them to have a voice and in the most healthy way express themselves. But now that COVID-19 and the whole experience that began last year has exposed many things about our young people throughout America, in general, as well as the functionality of many churches in their lives. That's what we saw at a time when they were out literally setting major cities on fire, expressing anguish. And I'm not just talking about African-American children now. Okay? I'm talking about all those who participated in it for whatever reason. What we did not see is the church assume a role as a voice of influence, a calming voice, an instructive voice, a guiding voice for them. That's what COVID-19 demonstrated in the last year. Now, despite the fact for decades, particularly in urban America, where there are numerous denominations or congregations within a 10-20 block radius, there's been a need for those places to be sitting, chilling centers, deports for change, social upliftment. You've heard me in particular talk about that. But that's what it has exposed. I can say as a pastor over the last, soon be 26 years now, I don't believe I'm exempt from any responsibility. So I'm going to say we have an opportunity to learn from this lesson. Okay? Now, that's not to say that no churches did anything. We certainly didn't see them. If they were, the media didn't put them out there. So how do we highlight those things that they did? And how do we bring them to bear so that more people can benefit from them? That would be our question. Talk Straight tonight, our topic, can the church hear me now? If you saw the promo, you saw empty pews with an empty podium. With the exception of one young man with a bandana on his face, hiding himself with his fist in the air. And the question is asked, despite all that has went on, as a result of that, can you hear me now? That's what we're going to talk about tonight on this May 18, 2021. Listen, Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Doctor, 657-383-0944. Go and get your spot. Go and get your spot. Give us a call here. We'll bring you in here. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from you. All right? But check this monologue out. Check this monologue out. For your new people, I offer a monologue to bring context. The conversation we'll have for the next about an hour and 50 minutes here. Okay? And I want to hear from you. So give me about 15, maybe 20 minutes to get through our monologue here, and then we open the floors so that you can talk straight to me, okay? 657-383-0944. That is the number to call in the studio tonight, all right? If you want to email me after the fact, you can send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com, bfcinstitute@gmail.com. Hebrews, the 10th chapter, the 25th verse, says, forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as ye see the day approaching. Okay. 1 Peter 4 and 17 says this, for the time has come that judgment must begin in the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? These two texts together brings us something to ponder, to think about. You don't have to. You don't talk straight. You're going to hear it. Listen. Two things we can take away from it. There is a need for us to congregate, to come together, to be unified as one. Okay? And the idea of judgment, order, discipline, starts with those who bring themselves together in unity and one. Because if we don't have it, what will happen to those people who know not the wisdom and the truth of God's word? You see that, beloved? Can the church hear me now? I would argue tonight that that is the voiced question from young folk who are struggling economically, socially, even emotionally right now. Can you hear me now? Good question. Good question. Quote, when people are voiceless, they will have temper tantrums, like a child who has not been paid attention to. And riots are massive temper tantrums from the neglected and voiceless people, end quote. That was a quote by the late Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Now, during the decades of slavery, slave associations, organized groups, represented a constant source of concern for slave owners themselves. For many members of white society during this time, black religious meetings symbolized the ultimate threat to their existence as slave owners. Nevertheless, it was historically recorded that African slaves established themselves and relied heavily on whatever spiritual expression that they can have. That's what we would call church today. Their religious practices offered a means of release from the strain, emotional and physical strain of slavery. Africans retained many of the indigenous ideas of worship and deity that came with them and their ancestors from the motherland that we called Africa, even though they were in the context of slavery. But they found some refuge in the teachings of Christianity as it was presented to them, and as they blended those indigenous thoughts and ideas with these new concepts. And as the generations got older and spread out, many of those traditional practices began to fade, and Christianity became the dominant thing. These exercises of the slaves were closely watched, such as to detect the plans for escape and insurrection. Now, you all know the story that Georgiana Truth used the Negro spirituals as a primary mode of communication to maintain the Underground Railroad with other groups. African-American churches showed an air of militancy in the eyes of these individuals who wanted to keep slavery. Insurrections such as that we read about in history from Nat Turner in Virginia, it was born in part out of this secret communication and code that talked about their frustration and their desire to be free, while it wasn't understood, that was a concern of the slave owners. Understanding the potential end that it could bring about, many whites opposed the idea of educating Afro slaves, Negro slaves as they called them. The fear was, as they are educated, they begin to think for themselves. Uh-oh, y'all walk with me tonight. They will begin to think for themselves. When we look at African-American history, we see the role that the Negro colored or black church played in the social growth and development of people who were slaves and then later freed from slavery. There were markers to indicate how the organization or the institution of the church, or the black church, if you will, played a significant role. It was the place or the depot for all things that became political in nature, social, spiritual, and even emotional. When we look at the term or the phrase, quote, the black church, end quote, I would argue that it's somewhat of a misnomer. And I'll tell you why. The black church implies that everybody that is of a certain social class or economic status or even a group identify and agree with that title as being black or the black church. And in reality, we find that that is not the case, that there is more lack of cohesion among various African-American communities, even in their religious practice, hence the divisiveness of denominationalism that historically has existed among Negro, black, and colored folk. This, unfortunately, is not something that everyone embraces and accepts. Problem right there. Now, I want to talk post-Civil War, after 1865, when you're free now. You can do your own thing. You can think for yourself. Bring us up to May 18, 2021. You can think for yourself, remember? Wait a minute. What's going on, Doctor? What's going on? Consider this, my friend. After emancipation, black churches became virtually the only place for these newly freed folk and currently freed folk to find refuge. They moved away from the hush office, where some of their meeting place, secret meeting place, and they retreated. They retreated to these places, again, to meet and to hide. Formerly, during this time, a church separation petition, historically, was circulating in around 1867. These were members of a mixed church, which was predominantly white. And these black folk realized now we're free, and we can think for ourselves. And they came to reason among themselves that, listen, we have a different political and social struggle than even these brothers that we've, and sisters we've been fellowshipping, worshiping with. And accordingly, we should take our theological beliefs and try to align them with the realities of our political and social status post-slavery. Are y'all walking with me? And therefore, we need to kind of be by ourselves to plan and to be proactive. Eventually, their white brothers and sisters in this Baptist church agreed with them, and they signed off. That Baptist church was Fairfield Baptist Church in Northumberland County, Virginia. They signed off on it. They freed them. They let them go from the church. And they started what was known as Shiloh Baptist, or the all-black Shiloh Baptist Church. There are many others. You hear about Richard Allen with the AME Church and others. I certainly don't mean to or overlook them in any way. But as I offer that small bit of history, the point of that is to indicate to you that the church has long been a place where the Afro-American subculture. Now, again, I'll explain just very briefly. When I use Afro-American, I'm speaking from purely a sociological, descriptive point of view. You see, the word Afro has the meaning of anything or anyone who identifies with origins from a place we now call Africa. That's what makes it Afro. And that presence is all over the world, not just in America. So when we talk about Afro, that's the most sociologically correct description of the people that we're making reference to that either has or identify with the ancestry, the gens solis and gens sanguinis, as used in the lexicon of the American legal language, of course, and identify with blood rights and ancestry in the continent. Now, as I shared with you earlier, everybody don't see themselves as black. Everybody don't see themselves as colored, Negro. Some people don't see themselves as Afro or African-American. You follow what I'm saying? We have some work to do in terms of becoming one and together. But meanwhile, our young people in 2021 are posing the question. Grown folk, preachers, everybody who represents this community, this place, y'all been doing y'all thing, but it doesn't seem like you hear me. Are you hearing me now? Are you hearing me now? They've been killing one another, unfortunately, in cities like Chicago, Detroit, and Baltimore, Maryland. And unfortunately, they've been killing each other in St. Louis and in New Orleans, Liberty City, Florida, Miami. They've been doing it. There's nothing new. But COVID has exposed, again, the functionality and the role of one historical major institution that the mamas and grandmamas have long turned to for hope and security. You heard the text. You heard the text that we read. And what we said in the monologue, very simply from the text, is what they have looked for, and that is the judgment, the good, sound reason that begins in the house of God. Where is it? And can you hear me now? That's the question tonight, my friend. 657-383-0944. I hope you can help me. I'm a preacher and I'm a pastor, and heaven knows I'm not here to denigrate the role of the church or the preacher or the pastor. I do it because that's my duty. And we need to hear these babies. And as we move forward from restriction and the idea that there's something greater than God that we should halt, listen to, and follow, young folk want to know, wait a minute, hold up, y'all back up now, because y'all told my mama, my grandmama, my great-grandmama that there was nothing more powerful than God and that he can fix and heal anything. I was certainly what you were saying when you insisted and made them feel bad about not giving it tithes and offering, and they'll ask quite often. So let's stop me when I'm lying. 657-383-0944. That's the number you can call. That's the number you can call. But as you call the gospel keynotes, and we had the privilege here on Talk Street a couple of years ago now of having Teddy Cross be our guest. The talk show was grown largely out of a traveling lecture circuit that I did a few years ago from 2012 to about 2016. And when we started this talk show, and we traveled several cities, and one in particular down in near Bessemer, Alabama, in Columbus, Mississippi, in the Clarksdale area. And one of the groups that we were working with, they had a little concert, and one of the singers that came and sang that night was Brother Teddy Cross, who used to sing with the infamous gospel keynotes. And had an opportunity to meet him, and my wife and I engaged with him, and he was gracious enough to come on and be our guest here on Talk Straight. Why do you say that, Doctor? Because he said something, as he sang this song years ago, that was key, and I'm convinced that it's related to where we are in 2021. Old and young folk need this. Listen to what Brother Teddy said.
Thank you.
for listening to that. Hear me now. That is the voice of young folk. Young folk who are despondent, now even more so dismayed. And feel as though, man, look, we've been hunted. We're the prey. Nicole, let me hear from you. I'll give you an opportunity to share your thoughts. I want to learn from that, and I'll share mine. If you have been with me from the beginning, you heard the monologue, where we laid some things down, and perhaps we will make reference to some of the things that we asserted in that monologue. But for sure, in 2021, let me tell you something. We have got, who is we? First of all, I've learned to define who we is. As I alluded to it earlier, everybody don't identify themselves the same. But if you're like me, then there are some of us who understand that if we want gains to not to be the dominant force, if we want to stop black-on-black crime, if we want to stop the terrorization of Afro-American streets, blocks, and neighborhoods, babies innocently being killed in the carnage of violence, if we want to stop the destruction of drug use and alcoholism, and the breakdown of the nuclear family, if we want to rid those things, judgment must begin with us. Oh, I hear somebody saying, judge not that ye be not judged. My friend, the word judgment talks about, it simply means in this case, in this instance, having good sound reason and operating from principle. I don't want to give myself credit for it, but it came from the text, 1 Peter 4:17. It said very clearly, for the time is come. Judgment must, not it could or should, it has to begin at the house of God. In 2021, the time has come that those of us who say we believe and we have faith, put up or shut up, align that faith with the example, with the teaching, the love, and the encouragement, the embracing of particularly our young folk. And if it is first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel? In other words, if Dockery ain't straight, excuse my English, Dockery hadn't got himself together, and he purports himself to be a voice of authority, positive influence, then what's going to happen to everybody else that he wants to listen to him? Y'all see where I'm going with that? You see what I mean? See, the reality is that these things are not going to wait. As long as we're bickering and fighting and disagreeing and what have you, I would hope that post-COVID, even if you have a different denomination, that we see more collaborative activity among particularly African-American congregations. It would be just splendid if we can see that across the board for all ethnicities. That would be wonderful. Be great. But if we don't see nothing else, we need to see folks who live within the same radius of one another, 5 to 10 mile radius of one another on one accord, especially when in that same 5 to 10 mile radius, what you see is violence and destruction. And I understand that the media plays a particular heightened role in popularizing a lot of it. I get that. But the truth of the matter is, beloved, unfortunately, collectively speaking, my people, I didn't say your people, I said my people, who I love, doing a little too much, go sit down somewhere. So you're listening to Talk Straight tonight, Tuesday, May 18th, 2021. Show is scheduled for 2 hours. Got another hour and about 28 minutes or so that we can go. I'll be here until you give me a call. If you're listening, I want you to hesitate. I know that we've had a few callers to call on who are pretty verbose, and they do a lot of talking. And I understand that many people don't want to find themselves in a heated argument with folks. Don't worry about that. Dr. Gatson, I'm the host and the facilitator of our conversation. I want to hear what you got to say. I don't want you to hesitate to call if you should like to. If you don't, that's okay. That's cool. The floor is open, though. This is Talk Straight, and for the last 4.5 years now, that's what we've been striving to do. Be straightforward and honest. Now, if we don't like the way we look, the way things sound, the way they come out, guess what, beloved? There's an opportunity for us, you, me, and anyone else who are concerned to change it. That's how people, they just playing games. Right? Talking loud. That's what my boy James found. He's talking loud, but then he said, like a dull knife that's not cutting. Just talking loud, but then saying that, Mr. Loud and Wrong. I don't want to be Mr. Loud and Wrong. How about you? You want to be Mr. Loud and Wrong? Well, let's see. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and let you know that the floor is open. The floor is open. And while I wait, I'm in the studio. You can call live in the studio, Facebook, if you listen to me. Follow me on it on Facebook. Feel free to jump in here. 657-383-0944. I took the time for my busy schedule to open up and to maintain open Talk Straight here for you. Give us a call here. While I wait you, I'm going to go and listen to my friend, Teddy Cross, some more, the Gospel Keynotes, where he's singing One More Time. That's related to our topic tonight. A question that many young folk are asking, can you hear me now? You didn't hear me at first. Now that we all got to pick the pieces up from 2020 and move on, pandemic, can you hear me now? That's the question. That's what we're trying to answer. That's our topic tonight in the form of a question. 657-383-0944. As I wait your call, we're going to listen to Teddy. We're going to listen to Teddy and some other things here. We got about an hour and 20-something minutes, so we got time. Give us a call. 657-383-0944. I'm going to Oh, Willie Neil Johnson, man, the late Willie Neil Johnson. Listen to that. Yeah. 657-383-0944. Johnson, one more time. And right now, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're talking tonight from the topic, Can the Church Hear Me Now? As I've said, that is a question that is lingering, particularly for young people. And we must prepare ourselves to be responsive, lest we lose our footing and our place within the Afro-Americans. When I say we, what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the institution of the church, particularly the African-American church. Okay? Because there's a serious question right now about it. Believe me, you. I read a study. I try to stay abreast on current events and things of that nature, and I read a study, and a recent study, May 10th, this particular article came out, and it's by the group. This particular study here was done by the Kaysan Newswire, basically, and what they suggest in this particular study is that 86% of Americans report a change in their personalities through the pandemic. Now, you heard me start out talking about young people in particular, and over the summer, how even though they were told that this thing can kill you, that didn't stop them from going down and expressing their anger and frustration about many stories in the news that were reel to reel, back to back. And in the end, A lot of black folk died. A lot of black businesses were destroyed. A lot of black communities were decimated. And many of them were already in terrible socioeconomic plight prior to. What it didn't do, it didn't stop or didn't scare young folk from shooting and killing one another in cities like Chicago and Detroit and Baltimore, Maryland, and your major cities, major hubs. Didn't do that. You know, and what it brings us to is the point where we recognize that our babies need us, not to wait on the president, any governor, or the mayor. They need us. You say you're concerned. You say you love them. Can the church hear me now? I got my co-host on there, Pastor Ricky Waller. Welcome, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing, Pastor Doctor?
Pretty good, sir. Pretty good. Pretty good. You've been maintaining. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's good, brother. Mighty good.
All right. All right. We've been maintaining the airway here for Talk Straight tonight on this Tuesday night, May 18th. And our topic is, can the church hear me now? As I explained in the monologue, that's where a lot of young cats are right now, and young ladies as well. They've been struggling for a long time, Pastor, and they were ignored. Their struggle was ignored in the church now I'm talking about. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I understand that.
And the question here in 2021 is, as we move forward, everybody collectively as a whole dig themselves from their hiding places and consider coming out, can the church hear them? Or will they be further put on the back burner and forget about it? What do you think about that?
So one thing that I do know is that that's a good question, can they hear? You know, but are they concerned? Can they hear? You know, do they understand the question? Can they hear? Are they, you know, concerned about what's going on to be able to hear? So there's a whole lot to go on with that, I'm sure. But if they can hear, there is an echo, but they got to come outside to hear it.
It's out there, ain't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's out there, isn't it?
Yeah, they can. Most certainly.
Yeah. So, and I made the point of explaining that my intention, I'm a pastor myself, and I have no intention of denigrating the church or diminishing its role, but it is very clear to me in my conversation, interaction, past and present, that there's a tremendous need right now for those of us in leadership there to assume that role, we're on now with caller, look like St. Louis has joined us and look like New Orleans has joined us. Let me recognize them in the conversation tonight. Gentlemen, we're talking from the topic, can the church hear me now? And I want to give you an opportunity to respond. But I don't know if you heard our monologue, but we explained in the monologue how that while everybody's trying to find a refooting placement post-COVID, particularly this population who were displaced prior to, during, and now, need the church as an institution to be organized, unified, to address their needs. Let me first recognize 504-4756 out of New Orleans. Welcome, sir.
Well, greetings, Reverend Dockery. I bring you greetings from the great city of New Orleans during this age of the pandemic. I did hear your monologue. I had not been able to tune in for the last few weeks. I've been busy. However, I will say this, that point one, the studies have shown that U.S. black people are the most church-going people than all other ethnic groups in the United States. The Pew Research Center is one of the sources for that. But that's not anything new. That's those studies have come out every year on religion in America. So black people, out of all the other groups, still hold on to the faith. Number two, when we talk about the black church, we must be very specific in defining the black church. So in my study of African-American history, the black church basically are those denominations that they themselves organize. So let me name them. The African Methodist Episcopal Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, the National Baptist Convention USA, the National Baptist Convention of America, the Progressive Baptist Convention, the Church of God in Christ, and the Church of Christ Holiness. Those particular denominations make up what we call the black church. Now, you have churches where blacks make up the majority of the population, but they're still under the control of the white body of denominations, such as the Roman Catholic. As I grew up Roman Catholic here in New Orleans, my family is mixed, Catholic and Baptist. So I grew up Catholic, but we would often attend Baptist church with aunts or something like that. I used to enjoy that. You have black Methodists, but they under the, not the black Methodists used to have their own little network, some kind of way that got dissolved. And then you have the black Presbyterian, all of that's under white. The problem, in my view, as it relates to the church reaching out to the young people, has been since the 1980s, many blacks have tried to emulate white tele-evangelists. So now you get a lot of people leaving the mainline African denomination. You like the white people too, leaving the mainline denomination. And the black people going out into these tele-evangelist ministries with their wife on the side and all that kind of stuff. I think that's backwards. Let me tell you why I think that's backwards. When you look at these black church denominations that I named, they had colleges and universities. They had theological schools. They had orphanages. They had homes. They had institutions. And when you break off on the ministry all by yourself, you and your wife, it's just y'all. You're not part of a collective body having the impact nationally. Now, the problem in the mainline denominations has been the lack of leadership development and handing leadership down to the younger people. Because in the United States, black people, the church was really the only little thing we had to reflect some kind of leadership. So, you know, you might be a pastor of a church for 45 years, Rev, and people like yourself didn't develop a leadership training program to bring the young people in. Now, the young people have to understand this, too. A lot of this new stuff that they want to bring into the Christian faith, we can't have that. We can't have no six-foot man with a wig on saying he feels like he's a woman standing behind the pulpit. And what is happening is we become so brainwashed to be a part of this LGBTQ movement that we are, you know, being misled to accept. So that's not a here nor there. But what I'm saying is it's a lot of changes in the economic and lifestyle of the country. Just like many black people were rooted in the black church in the rural areas, and then when they went up north, they still held on to that. But changes over time, the crack epidemic in the black community, the war on drugs, and all these other things, these generations who were raised by grandmothers and stuff because of the attack on the black community has created a disconnect. And the church just didn't have an adequate response in the 1980s and the 1990s. The African-American church didn't have an adequate response to a lot of the things that were happening economically and socially, such as the deindustrialization of America, where the jobs were being sent overseas, and so forth. All that had an impact on the church. So you might have worked at a little plant, Reverend Dockery. Your wife might have been a school teacher. But see, you might have been a deacon in Mount Zion Baptist Church, and your wife might have been a secretary. Y'all had some leadership in the community, even though you you may have worked real jobs, you see. And now, not to mention the educational level of the African-American community as it increased, some of the congregations did not move and adjust itself with the increase in educated population in some of the churches. Some churches have, such as a lot of churches that always were educated churches, but a lot of the blue-collar working-class churches, as a lot of their members and young people went off to college and so on and so forth, there was nothing to attract them and keep them there. I'll be quiet now.
Yeah, Brother Warren, I appreciate that. You put a lot of things on the floor, and I recognize that history, that's a vital part of the evolution of the, quote, black church, end quote. But I want to ask you, during the summer when we saw buildings set afire, we saw the gentleman in St. Louis die, lose his life. I'm not going to label what it was. Some people say it was a protest. Others said it's just an outright riot and violence. But you didn't just see dark-colored people out there. You saw Caucasians and Asians and a lot of other folks, but they were all young Americans, and they were in urban American cities tearing them up. My question to you and to the rest of the panel, did they seem to care if the black church was Methodist, Baptist, Pentecostal, Presbyterian? Did that matter to them at all? In fact, did we even hear from the black church? Did we hear a formal response to them about how we embrace and deal with the pandemic? I missed it, if it was. I missed it. So somebody help me with that. Let me recognize. I know that I was responding to something you said right quickly. Go ahead and respond to that, and then let me bring in a caller from St. Louis and Pastor Wallace. Go ahead, Wallace, right quickly.
I think we got to understand that the mainstream media promotes a lot of these big, solid evangelists like T.D. Jake and others. And so these other organizations have made statements. They have, but it just was not broadcast on the television, whether it's Fox News. See, Fox News show a lot of these black ministers who are conservative and Republican and who hate black people. So they show them. And then the other station might show T.D. Jake and whoever else you got out there that's part of this evangelist movement.
Right. So let me get what did the conservatives or the liberals say? What meaningfully did they offer to keep young folk off the streets from killing one another? Because that didn't stop them. In all these cities we identified, that did not stop. That never slowed down. And guess what? It's still going right now on May 18, 2021. It's 7:54 p.m. Central Time here. What did they say, either one of the liberals or the conservatives? What did they say?
What did they say with respect to what in particular you're talking about?
In terms of encouraging those young people not to be violent, not to be destructive, and to stop the carnage that we continuously see in those streets, in those neighborhoods.
You know what Martin Luther King said in his speech, Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam, that he gave at the Riverside Church in 1967?
Very briefly tell us so we can open the floor to
us. He said, I cannot tell these young people to be nonviolent when the biggest purveyor of violence is the U.S. government itself.
Duly noted. So they didn't have anything. It sounded like they didn't have anything substantive. So get it.
No, they were trying to put critique in proper context. They were trying to put critique and criticism of society in proper context instead of isolating a vulnerable group is what Dr. King was doing.
No, I'm not talking about Dr. King. I'm talking about last year in 2020
up to now. There were many people said many things, but the reaction was more to the murder of George Floyd more so than condemning the reaction to that.
I saw that. I did see all that. In fact, I saw some people in major churches on the news. But, okay, hold your point right there.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome 4600 out of St. Louis. We're talking from the topic, can the church hear me now? And I support
I think
that
you
that
hear. I think you hear. Would you not consider yourself as being a representative of the church?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They failed.
Need I go any further?
Now, I'm not the church, though. That's the point that I'm making. See, it's easy for folk to assume that when you say the black church, that everybody's on the same sheet of music, they're in agreement. And that is not true. That's what I pointed out in the monologue. That's a misnomer. Everybody don't
Well, you know what the church, you know what the church was, what was symbolic of the church actually was people. People of the church.
True. But you're right.
And
you're right.
And the question would be directed to the people, and apparently, as the continuation continues to go on, as data shows, that you have some, but nowhere near enough. You know, in Chicago, this past from Friday through Sunday, you had 48 shots, 6 killed, and turned around Monday was 12-3. And for the last 361 days since Memorial Day of 2020, you had a total of 4,622 shot and 713 murders. So somebody ain't listening.
Right. Well, somebody ain't saying nothing. Somebody is not providing any guidance, any representation, any alternative to what you just described. Those are indisputable statistics, the facts that
exist. And then, Ruben, when you know, not to cut you off, when you look at the academic performance of these institutions, these buildings where these young people are supposed to be going to become educated and skillful, that would set the pattern of their productive life, that's not happening.
Right.
So, therefore, what we are seeing, and I may be wrong, it's what it is. You know, your last caller made something, talked about those statistics on the predominance of blacks that go to church and pray. Another thing, too, need to be brought out is that 68, close to 70% of black adults say abortion should be allowed in all cases, compared to about 59% overall population. So one would have to ask, what are people thinking in order to come up with that sort of logic? In one case, you're supposed to be saving life. Now, you ask the question, is the church listening? If the church, the people are listening to save the lives of these who are hollering for help.
Okay.
They must not be, because it's not happening. So you see, you got two things that's parallel each other, that's non-life-giving.
Yeah, and let me reiterate, if I may, gentlemen, that I want to emphasize to my listening audience that in bringing this topic up is not in any way intended to demonize the institution of the church or the black church, or if we're going to use that for the sake of our context or conversation, as it is to recognize that there is a crying voice looking for response and help. And as I said earlier, it's not the President of the United States, none of the 50 governors, their mayors of the city, or any of those people that they are looking for. Historically, it was the church institution that Negro, black, and colored folks gravitated to.
Can I say something else?
Yeah, one second. Let me finish.
Okay.
And found refuge in historically. And the data that I read, and I try to read on a daily basis current events and the evolution of them, is that there is a significant decline in the Negro or black church in terms of attendance when you compare it to 1930, 40, 50, and 2021, a significant decline. About 40%.
There's a significant decline in churches overall. The mainline white churches are losing their membership. That's why they're trying to woo black people into their congregation.
All right. I got you. Let me get an example.
The largest Protestant denomination in America is the Southern Baptist. The Southern Baptists are dying. And right here in New Orleans, the first black president, Reverend Fred Luter, that they had, they got Fred Luter in there in an attempt to woo more black people to the Southern Baptist. Because you see what they see, Rev, is they see those dollars in the black church. They see all that money black people got, and the white people want their hands on it, and they're trying to woo black people. That's why the Southern Baptists are creating all kind of what they call mission churches in the black communities. Now, Franklin Avenue, let me say this, Reverend, Franklin Avenue Baptist Church that Reverend Luter pastors, who was the first black president of the Southern Baptist, that church used to be a white church. And when the Southern Baptist whites left out of that particular neighborhood, blacks came to it. Even though Franklin Avenue has black membership and is considered a quote-unquote black church, that's a Southern Baptist church. And the Southern Baptists at any time could come in and snatch that charter right from under them.
Yes, you hold tight right there, though. You know, I hear what you're saying. Let me, we kind of cut St. Louis off in his point that he's made. Let me let him
finish. You're supposed to come to me. You're supposed to come to me after you finish your point.
Okay, well, one second. We're going to keep the dialogue going. We still got time online. And the phone lines are open. Go ahead, St. Louis.
But, you know, on the same time, we have seen some that did here other than you. And we can name them Sullivan and Luke Walker of Meridian Missionary Church there in Meridian, Mississippi. Good examples. And there's probably others that we just don't have not heard of and probably won't be mentioned. But you got those that do and those that don't.
Sure. Sure. Well, I was just going to say that I won't argue with New Orleans that much of what he's saying is true. It's about how you look at it, though, because you made reference to something, New Orleans, and that was the money that flows through, for the lack of a better term and for the sake of our conversation, the black church historically. Here's the thing. You all know that churches are considered to be a type of non-for-profit, right? It's not a 501c3. It's a 501b, I believe it is, if my members show me correctly. And it is for religious purposes. But it is not governed or kept up by they're not taxed. So the question becomes, Pastor Waller, with all the money historically that has flowed, and what's interesting to me is that I'm reading preliminary reports that the many congregations took a big hit in 2020, took a big hit. And some of them are looking for the government to help bail them out, right? Some of them qualified for some of the PPP money, right? But the point is that untaxed money that has flowed for years, and yet we don't see a focused collective, I'm speaking collectively now, a focused, trained use of it to hear these young folks. They've been crying out for decades. And collectively, and you're right, St. Louis, I place myself on the chopping block because I've been the pastor of an organized, established congregation for a number of years. And you're right. Those are things we should be asking ourselves. How can we respond? How can we respond? And that's not a negative thing. That's a good thing, I would think. Well, let me hear from Pastor Wallace for the week.
Okay.
Pastor Wallace, what do you think about this? I'll come back to you this thing, Lord. What do you think about that? I mean, we ain't talking about demonizing nobody or making nobody look bad. We're really talking about the babies. That's what it really, in my view, that's what matters the most. See, how can we hear these young people? Pastor, what do you think of that?
Well, I just said, you know, one of the most important things that I've said when you first started the show and you was talking about can they hear, and I said to you, bottom line, they are crying out, but they're not in the church, so you have to come outside in order for the – all the shooting that I heard somebody talk about, it wasn't that many shootings in the church, was there at all shooting in the church. All that shooting that I heard that was going on, it was on the streets. It was not in the church.
That's right.
So that means that talk is cheap, but the action is if you have something to offer, and you're willing to put forth effort, you take it to the streets where they are crying out at. And when you're very much highly intelligent, you never know who may listen to you and just may take heed. But if you're just sitting back talking talk and not walking what you're talking, it's just a bunch of talk. It's all there is to it. Because the word does say, go out into the world and carry the gospel.
That
you know, and if it said instruction, that's not something that he said, wait till they come into the church. If they're out there shooting up each other, they need to come out there and have a look with them, and you never know, they may pay attention to you. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I say you never know. I didn't say they was. You never know until you try it. And as I speak right now, I'm on the street right now. And that's not everybody has to be on the street. That's not what I'm saying. But to hear a cry, to hear the echo of a cry, I have to be in a position to hear it. And so, it's a lot going on, and they deserve somebody to come out to talk to them, especially when you have something to offer other than just talk, because you don't have no substance. No substance than just talking. No substance in that. That's easy to be done. The problem, those that are just talking and not putting forth effort to get out there. Matter of fact, if they had respect for God, and, you know, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to turn it back over to you. I do not want to be on the street. I got myself free. You know what I mean? But I'm not concerned about me. You know, my concern is there may be somebody else out there just like I was. You know, that maybe if I'm here, you know, to lend a hand, then it's a possibility that they can go in another direction, man. So it's a good topic, brother, Pastor Dockery, and I want you to know that. That's powerful statement, brother, what you said, something about being able to hear, you know.
Well.
Yeah.
Let me say this, Brother Dockery. One second.
Hold on one second. Pastor, don't lose your thought, Neil. I was going to say that last month, my insurance agency had a function, and we had a decent amount of food left over. So our intention was afterwards to go straight to the mission. I shouldn't say I was surprised, but I guess it's been a second before, since I've been that close to it, how many young cats who were sleeping in their cars because they were homeless. Y'all hear me? Young dude.
My goodness, see that? Now, you have to be out there, though, Pastor. That was good.
Young kid.
You was able to see that. Yeah.
Oh,
you was able to see that.
Sleeping in their cars.
Yeah.
That was their house. And the mission wouldn't let them in. So their house was their cars. Amazing.
How come they wouldn't let them in?
Either they were full or they're different. There were a lot of things, a lot of reasons they did.
Oh, okay.
I can't. All of them right now. But my point is, these are young guys now, young guys who literally have no roofs to sleep in. It was amazing. But it said to me that there is a tremendous need for me as a man of God, as a prognosticator of the gospel, to position myself. I'm tired of trying to get anybody else to do it, to be in a position to make the difference that can be made. New Orleans, you were trying to say something, but St. Louis had something.
For fairness to this topic, we shouldn't forget about the various individual churches and non-traditional ministries in black communities that are working with these young people on a daily basis. And we have to be careful not to create this image nobody's doing anything. And let me say this as relates to the protest and the response. One of the things people felt they had to be very sensitive to is not to come out on the wrong side of the issue as it relates to George Floyd. And another group, and a lot of ministers understand how white people like to use black ministers for their agenda. And so people just didn't want to play the role of for the government. Y'all Negroes, calm down. Y'all ain't got nothing to be angry about. People didn't want to play that role. And so just like Martin Luther King, refused to play the role of condemning the angry young blacks in Memphis and throughout the urban centers at that time in the mid to the late 60s. King refused to be used by the U.S. government because he understood the anger and the frustration that was that produced that. So he was more, he had more knowledge about what's going on. He understood psychological warfare. And let me say this point and be quiet. I find it interesting that the people who, I find it interesting that the people who promote being anti-abortion also have no problem with the police abusing and killing black people. I find that just a great contradiction myself. It's a ploy to recruit black people, because see, the anti-abortion thing really is about white people want every white baby to stay alive. They're worried about their population. And so they're recruiting black people like we always are recruited by different movements of white people. They try to recruit black people in this anti-abortion movement to give it some legitimacy. But these white people who are anti-abortion don't give a damn about black people's lives. They want black people to die. They want black babies to die. Look at the situation of black women, regardless of their educational level, dying in these hospitals getting labor.
You're kind of going into another topic on me now, and I don't want to blur what we're talking about with that. If you don't mind.
Somebody else brought up the abortion. Somebody else brought up the abortion. I thought I'd follow up and comment on it. I didn't bring the abortion issue up.
But that's not our topic. I appreciate that. I do appreciate what you said.
Well, okay.
Because it's a lot that can be said, that my friend, and a lot that needs to really be dived into, and that's not our focus tonight. We were talking about Henry Young.
Tell that to the person started talking about abortion. I didn't bring abortion up.
I'm bringing the conversation back to where it needs
okay.
to be. That's my as a facilitator for our discussion tonight. So just bear with me. But you did say something that is interestingly related in reference to why. That's what I heard you say. Maybe you can correct me. Why we didn't hear any major response, particularly from Black Church. In over the summer, you said I heard
Rare.
You say correct. Hold on one second.
Rare.
Let me make sure.
Okay. Yes. Rare.
Hey,
okay. All right.
Norman, let me ask the question, and then I'm gonna let you respond to it. Okay.
Okay.
Let me ask the question, because I didn't just hear it, but everybody heard it. All right. And what you said is, quote, they wanted to be careful not to come out on the wrong side of the George Floyd incident. And my what is the wrong side of the George Floyd?
The wrong side of the George Floyd issue is to say George Floyd deserved it, he had it coming to him, he a thug, and then ignore the issue of police relationship with black people and ignore that over decades, ignoring that. And then looking at the response and the reaction across America, any black person with common sense, with a connection to black people's soul, knew that George Floyd murder on camera in front of the world was the most cruelest and brutal thing ever done. And only a black person who has a conflicted soul and who wants to be white and who loves white people would sit there and have an attitude that George Floyd deserved what he had coming to him.
All right, stop right there. So what I'm hearing you suggest is that if I had told some young people, y'all don't go out, you don't have to stand outside and protest. There are other things you can be doing with your time and other things that you can do to improve the quality of life in your neighborhood and your community other than being out there where in the end of it, places were torched and there was looting and violence. Would I have been on the wrong side of that?
Let's be fair. It wasn't not even mostly black people out there doing that kind of stuff.
I said that earlier.
So to even dwell on it like it's a problem for black people, I think is a distorted view and distorted lens.
No. Question was,
you had black youth confronting a white youth about, hey, what are you doing here? We are not doing this. You had black youth confronting the white youth who was trying to bring in and instigate that violence.
You're right. And that's why I pose the question to the church, and particularly the black church. What is our response? What is our guidance? What is the direction that our young folks who are out there crying out for help, what do we tell them now post-COVID-19? That's the question, my friend. Let me go to St. Louis, though, because he's been waiting. He's been patient. St. Louis, what were you trying to say, sir?
Well, you bring the religious doctrines into it. One of the doctrines that was preached is that you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. And whether you do wrong onto others, it's going to come back on you one way or the other. If you do right onto others, it's going to come back on you. And fitting either with George Floyd or with your question, if you do right about your children, then it should come back and pay. You should reap benefits tenfold or more. But that's the first responsibility is that child that you bring into the world. Then if you lead that child into a proper paradigm, then that child can be used as an example for others to see. It happens all the time. In different aspects of life, we can name many of them. Hey, how about a cake?
Okay.
You take that cake out of the oven, you put it together, and you sit back there before you cut into it with that knife and admire. That's a masterpiece.
Yeah. That's a very interesting point. Hey, because one of the things that I'm coming right to you there in just a second. One of the things that I noticed was that more opportunities for people to go to school online and to get admitted into schools online were greater there than ever before. And it was interesting to me how many people had the time to be out in the streets, Pastor Wallace, where a lot of the mayhem we saw took place, as opposed to be somewhere focused, developing their cognitive faculties, their intellectual strengths and things of that. You understand what I'm saying? And I just wonder if that would have been a better address, an example for them. Go ahead,
Neil. Let me give you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a cousin Catherine. She's 90 years old. She lives in a rural area, about 45 minutes to an hour from Baton Rouge. She's a devout churchgoer. You know what she said when she saw the murder of George Floyd? She said, if I was able to walk, I'd have went out there. I felt like breaking something, too. Do you know how many old black folk wish they was out there breaking windows and burning stuff up, too?
I've heard a lot of them, yes.
So what I'm saying is, now let me say this, to be fair, there was a lot of young people taking advantage of the chaos just to go out there and to be foolish and stupid.
Okay,
but see, that's the nature when you have a flame that sets off. You know, you have people that come on the scene, don't know what's going on, and just want to be a part of the chaos. Yeah, you had a lot of that. And I think what you had in Nashville was that. What you had in Birmingham was part of that. And some of these other little areas where you had New Orleans, like New Orleans, you had the white anarchist group, they went around pulling down Confederate monuments and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you had young people who just wanted to be a part of the chaos because it looked like it was fun.
Okay.
But you're going to always have non-serious participants in something that's to be addressed seriously. Yeah, how many people go to church and don't really want to be in church but to start mess and create confusion? You see, so my point is, no, we don't want the young people to believe and feel that the solution is to go out and damage property and set stuff apart. But we have to be fair about the historical context. What we saw this, what we saw last year is not anything new in American history. Black people have responded that way, not to mention white people who responded. In fact, the original riots were white people coming into black neighborhoods, killing, lynching, and burning up black people's property. We up on the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa riot. It's called the Tulsa riots. Okay? So let's not isolate 2020 from American history.
But what nobody's doing that. What we're talking about is the direct impact that 2020 has had on the halting, the literal halting of social interaction and opportunities for organizations, churches in particular, to have their doors open and to offer meaningful.
People are working their way back to that.
One second, I'm going to give you the flow back. And my point in the monologue was that this didn't just start in 2020. Unfortunately, collectively speaking, and I include myself in that, as the institution, the black church institution, collectively speaking, I would argue we've done a poor job of hearing the cries prior to 2020. And 2020 has just pulled the Band-Aid off of that bleeding, gushing wound. That's my point. But go ahead, New Orleans, right quickly, and then
Saint Louis. I was just saying that, you know, in the pandemic, some of everybody everywhere have suffered communication with each other because of the pandemic. But people are working their way back to that. That type of interaction. Okay, and so I think that we have to look at this issue you're raising tonight. What I would frame it, if I had to do a topic on it, is has the African American denominations, have the African American denominations, quote, the black church, has it arisen to the occasion to help organize black people for self-sufficiency? Okay, because that's the issue there. We're dependent on a lot of public infrastructure where we do have resources in our hands to do a better safety network among ourselves. But I'm going to tell you this. As I travel across the United States, I am amazed at all of the beautiful edifices that these black churches have built and paid for with the money of black people. The black church truly is the most independent social interaction among blacks in the United States. In fact, when Reverend Fred Luter became president of the Southern Baptist Convention, he lives not too far from me, and he's a nice person. He's a very dynamic minister. He does a lot with men in his church in terms of working with them. But here go the point that people don't understand about Franklin Avenue Church, a church of like 5,000 or more people. It is still not a traditionally black church because it's in a white, racist denomination. And when he became president, a lot of black ministers don't trust him and didn't trust him because they knew that those whites were going to try to use him to approach the black Baptists and say something like this. Well, you know, Reverend Dockery? Huh?
You made that point. We got that point.
What I'm saying is the black church has power. It has a life force that white people still see. They want to capture that because of the money and because it's still the source of resistance. It's still the source of telling black people about the injustice of this country, and that's what the white people and some of their black allies want to finally conquer and extinguish that in black people, the concept of the black church.
Yes, sir. I hear you, brother. I hear you quite well. St. Louis, what were you going to say, sir?
Well, I don't buy nothing. I don't buy into that. You have a church, right?
Yes, sir.
You had one. You do collections, right?
I have one. I have one.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to tell you. Okay, you do.
I respond.
You do collections, right?
We do. We can. Yes. Yes.
What do you when you collect that money? What do you deposit that money?
Into a bank. Into a bank.
Is it a white bank or a black bank?
White bank or black bank?
Case in point. So if you're going to get it one way at the end or another, why work yourself if that in fact is true? Why would you take yourself out of the way? But getting back to the main point is that...
That was no point you made. You made no point at all.
Listen, I'm not talking to you.
Let him finish.
Did you understand what I said about that, Mr. Rubin?
I did.
No, he didn't. He didn't because you made no point.
How are you going to tell him about what he didn't do? I said that...
I'm not talking to you.
I said, Mr. Rubin, when you collect your money, and see, this person here got devil in him. Every time he comes on the show, he's evil. Very, very evil. Attack people.
Gentlemen, let's stay focused, man. We're talking about how to hit these young babies, man. That's all we need to matter.
And those are the ones that don't, and people, like you said, hey, nobody's stopping folks from helping their children, in particular, or other children. There's a lot of folks doing it. I think really that when you talk about the dysfunctionality, you only talk about maybe 5-10%, maybe 15% of the population at the most. It's lopsided. When you look at the imbalance in the male and female, like I think I told you last week, you got 1.6 million more.
That's not what he's talking about. Stay on the top.
1.6 more women than you do men.
All right.
You know, talking about the church here, you have the ability to establish those type of programs exist if people would take advantage. You can go and have any public school in your community and turn them into learning centers, have school for 12 hours a day like they did in Detroit, and that gets down to trying to achieve what it is that you're achieving.
Well, and the
churches itself. What are they open on Sundays and also Wednesdays? Well, that's Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
It depends. Well, what we do know is that there's a need, whether they open or not. There's a need for them to be open 24 hours a day. Okay, let's make that out. Let's put that out there.
I agree with you. It's a big need in some areas.
But to that point, I want to draw a personal example. My son, 2020 was the graduation of his year from college, and that was a milestone for him, right? Because he got the credentials as a mechanical engineer. But guess what? Guess what his graduation was? It was about 15 seconds of his faith online. There was no graduation. And I had a conversation with him about his natural disappointment for his hard work and effort being better and why that was.
What is that noise?
He could have been mad, and he could have went out, and he could have taken his frustration out and joined this and that and the other. But in reality, what he needs to focus on is what are you going to do with yourself beyond all of this? And all these folks that are out there, as you use your time, you'll never get that time back. And young folks got to understand, if you don't use your time wisely, you will lose that time, and you'll find yourself at an older age trying to play catch up to keep up with the world.
Well, are you referring to the people that was out there rioting?
To the people that took the time. Some people say they weren't rioting; they were just protesting. Whatever you call it.
I agree with you.
It brought to America with mayhem. It brought an air of tension, and it distracted the whole nation, white and black, from focusing on dealing with the fact that our public schools nationally have been failing. Socially,
you know,
health disparities were on the rampant. and as well as other social issues. We're distracted from the things we should have been focused on.
Well, those that's going to be focused on that is going to be focused. You're always going to have those who have been failed themselves in many ways. You know, the lady in Minneapolis, when they burned down a drugstore, she said, "Nah, I don't have no place to go get my medicine." An elderly black woman. You had the same thing in Memphis, Tennessee, when Kroger had to close 3 or 5 stores, maybe 3, because of rampant theft that was going on in those stores. You had elderly blacks that would go to those stores to get their medicine. Now what are they going to do? What are they going to do that's going to inconvenience themselves? And people don't think about this. Just like, I don't know if they're thinking about it or not. It's like when they burn down and loot stores. What are you going to gain out of that? There's nothing going to be gained out of that. Because if those stores even rebuild, the price that you're going to pay for the goods and the services is going to be increased. Your income's not increasing.
Yeah. Allow me to say this, St. Wilson, because that's a good point you bring. When you look at just 6 years ago in 14 with the issues in Ferguson, and then in 15 with the issues in Baltimore, and then in New York, you would think that a lesson could have been learned from that about how to move on, how to deal with the frustration, how to deal with the anxiety and the anguish, right? No, we've learned absolutely nothing, collectively speaking. Again, I won't say, I'm not trying to speak for everybody, but when you look at it as a whole, some of those same people that were out there this summer were a party to those things that went on 6 years ago. And what, as a nation, as a subgroup, have we learned about changing the conditions that lead to that? That those are things we
nothing.
Can do something about.
It's always a cause and effect. You go to the Ferguson Market there, a liquor store, with Mike Brown.
I'm coming to you, Norman. Give me a second. Go ahead, Sanders.
If you go to Ferguson Liquor, where Mike Brown was dealing in marijuana with the store owner, who's a foreigner, you go in that store, the prices are 30 or 40% higher than what they were before that incident. And around the corner, there on Shirley Lane, where you have Section 8 and low-income residences, those people don't have no place else to shop.
Well, my sister-in-law is one of those who were affected by it directly. Because you're right, that's where medication was picked up, at those pharmacies in that area. You're absolutely right. So I can speak from a personal standpoint of how it has displaced many people's lives. This was 6 years ago now. So that's just the point. And it's our young folks that I think we need to talk to. And, again, I'm not really looking at putting the blame on anybody other than myself. And asking myself, what is it that in the role and with the influence I have that I could do better? How could I make improvements? But let me see what New Orleans was trying to say there. He was trying to say something. New Orleans, what were you trying to share with us?
You know, one of my sisters is a retired teacher. I have a cousin that's a principal. I have neighbors that are teachers. In the ballroom I used to hang out in before the pandemic, they were teachers in the social club I belong to. And one thing about them is that they're actually working with these young people that some people scrutinize from a distance. And one thing I hear them talk about, they always say, these kids are coming to school angry and frustrated. If they understand these kids. Now, when people position themselves on a conservative platform and only want to see what buildings were burned down, then even the young people don't even see those people as anybody connected to them, because they see those people condemning them, coming at them like the other people do. In other words, the society already condemns black people, particularly young black people and black males. Now, Bertha Knox Gilkey in St. Louis, that's why she advocated for African-centered schools. Because Africans in the school don't teach conservative values. The two don't go along. And if you look at the school that was named after her, the Pomoja Afrocentric School, they teach them the Kwanzaa principles that some people say is a fraud. They teach them how to greet in African languages. In fact, right now, her daughter, I'm being put in touch with her daughter in Alabama, Miss Shepherd, because I'm going to do a show with her about her mama and the work her mama Bertha did in St. Louis. Those are the people that kept. They would never be up here condemning these kids. Mama Bertha would never share in the conversation with people who want to condemn these kids and condemn black people. That's counter to an African-centered perspective. And so we have to look at that there are people every day working with these same kind of young people we're looking at from a distance, and that's these teachers in these schools where these kids go. And these teachers got to work with these kids as best as they can, given the fact that the systems they work in restrict them and constrain them. And so we really have to look at the people actually working with them, not people who just talk, and don't do nothing.
Yeah. So New Orleans, I can tell you one thing.
Yeah.
I applaud the people that you described that you know. That's great. The only thing that's sad is that we can't clone them and put them in all these other places where the reality tells.
But guess what? You can learn how to relate to these kids. Because they have to relate to these kids every day.
Yes, sir.
You know what, Rumor?
Hey, Pastor.
Let me ask you again
about the... Give me the topic again, because I want to make sure what I'm getting ready to say.
Can the church hear me now? That is the question that is asked by many hurting.
So this is where
can the church hear me now?
And I said earlier that they won't be able to hear unless they get outside where the people are. So as I said, I was on the ground. It was a young lady walking by, you know, and she was always just talking about how, you know, they can be out here but don't have to be other world, but at least still be out here amongst the people so they can see what's going on. So if they're not out here, they can't see what's happening one way or the other. She wanted to have a say, so I said, well, I'm going to give her a chance to have a say. She's just walking by. If it's all right, I don't mind giving her an opportunity to have a say concerning that. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Praise the Lord, everybody.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to say praise the Lord.
Okay.
I am officiated with Grace Apostle Church. The late Melvin, Dr. Melvin Dudley Boyd. Although the world, see, I know about that word, Holy Ghost is real. But in order to even be who you are of yourself, because we all was in this world at one time doing our simple things. But to become who you are as a pastor, deacon, religion, you have to come among the people to see who you are of this world. But if you get out here and you're not strong enough in this world, then
as
you're out here of this world, as I am, but I'm out here doesn't mean I'm appreciate what they do. What I'm saying is, in order to prosper who you are as a leader of a congregation who believe in you, you got to go out there among your people.
Okay, now that's where I want to be at, Pastor. Now, did you hear that right there? Now, there's some same thing I was talking about. Now, here is an individual just walking from the store and happened to realize that they see me out here and they realize they just want to pass me by. They spoke to me and everything. They heard me on his podcast. And they just say, well, can I have a say? Because, you know, the people have to come out here where the people are in order to find out what's going on. And sure enough, I'd already said that. Now, check this out. All I'm saying is, we can talk and continue to talk, but if there's no action in the talk, you're just talking loud and you ain't saying absolutely nothing until you get out here on the ground where the people are. I didn't even say it, man. That's how you gonna find out how strong you are. You know, the word does say, we then who are strong all to bear the infirmity of the weak. So if there's weak people out here and you're strong,
Get out here and show yourself strong.
That's
and you
right.
understand? You don't have to become weak.
Say who you are. You ain't
out in other words, you just said you can't say who you are if you're not out here amongst them. So in other words, what you're saying don't matter to nothing. I mean, I didn't say that,
nope.
but that's what
get
the person
here,
is saying. So get out here and see what it is and get off that high horse that you're on. So what I'm saying is, how are they going to hear you? How are they going to hear you? You understand? Or can your church hear them? Either one. If you're not out here where they are, then there's no way they're going to be able to do one or the other. You know, so I'd like the topic that you had, man. I'm telling you, right on target, but we need to stay right there and don't drift over into somewhere else, try to escape it. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, you can't escape what you're talking about. You're talking about something that's valuable, something that's needed. And if, you know, if you're going to stop all this stuff, because none of them shootings was in no church. All them numbers, you know, it was not in the church. So most of that is going on the outside, and that's what it's all about. And I thank you for bringing up the topic, man. I yield back to you.
Hey, Rev, can I add something, Rev?
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank her for joining us.
Let me say this. Whatever flaws or shortcomings we identify in what we call the black church, if you was to snap your fingers right now and there was no more black church, black people will collapse tomorrow. And let me tell you this. I used to have a Reverend Varnado lived in my neighborhood. And whenever these young people out here get killed or they die prematurely or early as a result of something, the Reverend Varnados get the phone calls from the family. And they preside over these young people's funerals. And I'm going to say this again. The African-American church gave sanity, gave refuge to black people in this country. If you was to snap your fingers and eliminate the black church today, black people will collapse tomorrow. I will stand on that analysis.
Well, let me offer for your consideration. I'm not trying to convince you of it, but let me offer for your consideration another thought. What we call the black church once was most viable historically. It has evolved to a position now of losing its significant relevance in the so-called Negro, black, and colored struggle. Now, it's not too late for it to make itself relevant, I don't think. However, in 2021, by all measurements, there are people right now who are wondering why so many Negro or black or colored preachers were not more vocal about how people should respond to the COVID threat. They wanted to hear from them, and they didn't. How do you know that, Doctor? How do you know that? Because I'm still in communication with folks, not in just Nashville, but in several cities, who wonder, why didn't we hear from our leadership? We saw some of them conveniently join marches or protest, but we didn't hear them say nothing about how we're going to balance our faith with this reality in our country throughout that whole year. Didn't hear none of them.
Rev, I heard some ministers respond. They denied it was serious and they caught it and they died.
Give me a name.
There are several stories. There's a minister out there in Virginia. It was a pastor out there in Virginia when the stuff first started, and they told people to not go to church. He died, and his daughters and all his family caught the COVID. Okay, so there were ministers that died because they wanted to deny that COVID was real.
And who were these? I mean, talk to me. That's what I'm asking you.
Why don't you Google ministers who died as a result of COVID? I mean, the stories are so vast. You don't have to ask me to name one. You can research it yourself.
I don't need to do that. That's not necessary.
You sound like people didn't believe Trump lost the election.
All this argument.
Here's what I'm speaking to. Here's what I'm speaking to. I'm speaking to the hyperfluous notion that you just introduced in our conversation. That's what I'm speaking to. It was filled with hyperbole.
You made a blanket statement that you didn't see no responses from the black church community on COVID, and I said there was an element that refused to take it seriously. They caught it and it died.
Let me stop you for a second. Listen to me real carefully. Now, what do I mean by a focused and a organized response? I saw in a black church in Atlanta, in fact, a historical one, where Martin Luther King was the pastor, several major voices that the media has put out there say things, but nothing about how these young folks can focus on reestablishing and maintaining their lives and stopping the carnage in the dark. One of them was from the city. He came from the city where the shooting that was taking place. You didn't hear him say nothing about that. In fact, it was almost as if they encouraged the behavior that led to the destruction. That's what I'm talking about. If I missed it, and I've been watching it. If I missed it, somebody please let me know.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. The young people ain't listening to no conservative perspective that you and Piatti trying to push. You've already cut yourself off from the young people like
you. Why are you putting my name? Nobody called you. Now you're getting angry.
Hold on. That's your problem, New Orleans, that you seem to want to always classify things as conservative or liberal. Forget that, man.
That's what you're pushing, Rev. That's the agenda you're pushing.
No, listen to me. No, big brother. I'm talking facts. I'm teaching facts.
You're speaking a biased perspective.
You're running out of time. You're
about
ready to close, Rail. I want to get one more point in there.
Okay, give me a second. I'm coming right to you. I'm speaking to my. I'm not trying to convince New Orleans of anything. I'm speaking to my audience right now. That's what I'm doing. And that is that this doesn't take a political or denominational. The truth don't take a political or denominational side. It is what it is. Now, you can just open your eyes and see outside your front door in your respective city what's going on. And you want to know who want to do something about stopping it? I'm telling you that young folks are asking the church, can you hear me now? That's what we're talking about. All that other gossip, I don't care nothing about it. You can, the Democrats and Republicans can kill one another if they want to. Leave the rest of us alone. Let us go on, live our lives, be happy and prosperous. That's my
book.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. Even the Bible talks about save for a rainy day and sow your seeds in fertile soil so that you can reap. You can reap the best in your harvest. That's conservatism. And, you know, I heard a name mentioned by Bertha Gilkey. Bertha Gilkey was not from the African Center curriculum. I knew Bertha very well, and I worked with her on school choice issues. And she was being supported. You know, she first started off with the Cochran Gardens, working with Jack Kemp and Ronald Reagan. When time came for, this was very unique. She was one of the founders of tenant management, where the tenants, the people that lived in these units were responsible for their upkeep. And also, they would scream who was going to come in and move in them. But okay. What made her so particular was that they built new units. And, of course, the people had to get out of the old units. Well, she arranged it so that in negotiation where the people that was living in the old units could move into the brand new units and pay no more than what they was paying when they was living in the old units. That was a great thing.
Okay.
Yeah, and I really appreciate her. And I told her that these people don't appreciate you. They're going to run you to death. And, of course, she ended up dying of cervical cancer about 4 or 5 years ago.
Rest her soul. There, I will reiterate that there are likely people that we don't know of that are doing some wonderful things, that are fighting against the odds of folks who don't want to do nothing.
There's a lot of them. You know how many schools I built in St. Louis Public School District? At least 8 to 11.
The last one I built,
I believe, was Vashon High School. Maxine Waters, alma mater.
Hold on. This is what I'm trying to say, Jenny. And that is that what's most important is not what some group or some organizations on position feel what they're looking for. What's important is how do we respond to this crowd here that wants to be heard. As I iterated in the monologue, Dr. King described how it is those people who turn to protest violently who feel as though they are not heard. Now, that's, you know, everybody may not give a darn about that. They may not care. I certainly do. And that's really what I think.
Well, you know.
Hold on one second. If it's something I got to do to make sure I respond to them different than what I've been doing, then that's what I should be considering, you know? That's what I should be considering. Right quickly, St. Louis, and then we're going to go around and say.
Well, my response is when I built some of the most technological Marvel school in the St. Louis,
okay.
St. Louis County, and Southern Illinois area. And here's the thing.
Okay.
These kids, these young people are being let down early. When you look at these test data and the academic data, where you have like a school there in Normandy where you got 77% graduation rate, and you got 3%, 5% of the students out of a student body is probably in the hundreds that's only proficient in math, that there spells failure.
I agree. And that's something we can do something about. Somebody can. I mean, you know.
Somebody can instead of talking and complaining all the time.
They should do something
about it. The law is on your side. It was whites, the Freemans, that came and helped Bertha. People always down in white folks. What would you be without them?
Okay. Thank you, St. Louis. We're going to wrap it up. Let me give New Orleans an opportunity to give a final thought before we get out of here tonight. We've been talking
Let me answer that question. Without white people, you would be better off than being dependent and mentally and psychologically dependent on them, as a lot of people like yourself are. But let me say this. I saw a documentary on Billy Graham last night on American Experience on PBS on Billy Graham. And one of the things he was pointing out was Billy Graham was getting his crusades going in the 50s and the 60s and the 50s. He invited Dr. King to give the opening prayer at Madison Square Garden. Dr. King felt that he had an ally in Billy Graham. And Billy Graham was very close with Richard Nixon. They were like the best of friends. And when the protest started and when the dog was being sicked on black people and all of that, Billy Graham condemned the protesters. And when Martin Luther King called him to ask him to take a stand, Billy Graham refused. In other words, Billy Graham let Dr. King down. But Billy Graham got egg on his face too. When Nixon, in the Watergate situation, Billy Graham had egg on his face.
When the Nixon tapes
came out in 2000, and he heard Billy Graham participating in the anti-Jewish conversation with Nixon, Billy Graham, we got to shut him down and bring him to an end. He had egg on his face. What's my point? When we stand on a platform telling the young people don't eat pork, and we got a pork chop sandwich in our hand, and then the white man we get comfort in gave us the pork chop. The young people see the contradiction is what I'm saying. Reverend Waller, no, you can't reach them young people by condemning them and approaching them as if they're wrong. And the young people see these contradictions, and there are black people who are angry with the black establishment because they could not get in. And because they couldn't get in, they want to join forces with the white conservatives to attack them. We got to stop them kind of game and using our young people playing with that.
New Orleans, please. Come on now. Thank you for joining us tonight. And we appreciate you offering your thoughts. Nobody care about white people, conservatives, liberals, or none of
that. Oh, that's Piazzi. Piazzi want to lick their behind. He's saying, what we going to do without them? That's Piazzi pushing it.
That's immature. It's immature.
It is immature for him to say something like that. You're right. I agree with you.
Oh, no. It's immature to us being able to respond to this cry. Okay? And so that's what we're going to end on. But thank you very much for joining us tonight. We appreciate you. And to our listening audience, we'll be back Thursday night for another episode But for now, we're going to have Pastor Waller to wrap us up for tonight. Can the church hear me now? That's the thing that we should be asking ourselves. I'm talking to myself now as a pastor now for soon to be 26 years. 26 years. All right. Pastor Waller, wrap us up.
Hey, man, Pastor Doctor. Man, I'm telling you, we thank God for everybody who had a chance to call in, for those who were just listening. But most of all, I want to thank God for the topic, man. And until we focus in and zero in on the topic, and if you want to give God respect, because he is the ultimate authority according to this world, and not everybody's going to give him his just due praise, props, they hear.
Mm.
Listen, there's so much power in those words. Can they hear? It reminded me of when I went to the treatment center and the question was asked about Lynn Byers' life. Say, can they hear or will they hear?
Wow.
And I heard it, brother, and it helped me change my life. What am I saying? The word of God says faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So if they want to please God, you got to hear his word. Well, Pastor Doctor, just in case they didn't get anything out of this session, they have to stay tuned and realize more will be revealed. But you got to put God first. I yield back to you on that note.
My. Woo! That appreciate that. We'll be back Thursday night for another conversation, a stirring, rousing conversation. On behalf of my co-host, Pastor Richard Waller, thanks to those that listen to follow us tonight on Facebook, those that participate, and those who will come in the future. We'll see you Thursday night for another episode of Talk Straight.
Keep